Welcome to the Scalable Real Estate Investing Podcast, where we discuss the most scalable strategies, tools, and approaches to successfully invest in real estate. Learn how to make the most impact of your time, automate your real estate investing business, find off-market deals with minimum time invested, and leverage your capital to create as many income streams as possible so that you can achieve true financial independence. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Mason Clement.
Hi everyone, Mason Clement here. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to ask you one question. Are you sick of the wild swings in the stock market and ready to try something different? Did you know that investing in stocks actually put you at the very bottom of a company's capital structure, meaning that there's practically 0% chance that you're going to get any of your money back in the event that the company files bankruptcy? That basically you're putting yourself in the riskiest position for a questionable return. Personally, I hate the unpredictability and just waking up and having half of my investment gone when I didn't do anything wrong. So what a lot of people don't know is that you can actually make higher returns on a consistent basis by investing in the opposite end of the capital structure, which is actually the safest place to be, which is on the debt side in a first lien position. And you can do that by investing in real estate and specifically investing with my company in notes that are backed by the land that we purchase. So if you're ready to diversify your income stream, go ahead and go over to scalablereI.com and click on invest in the top right corner. There you're going to find a form that you can fill out to determine if you're eligible to invest with my company, Celion Capital, and we'll be reaching out to you to schedule an introductory call and speak more from there. So thanks a lot, and let's jump into the episode.
Hi, Scalable Investors. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Scalable Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Mason Clement, and today we have Robert Kirchgessner with us, who's based out of Florida. He's an architect and builder that's establishing his journey in real estate. I think that he's got a lot of transferable skills that it's going to be interesting to unpack. So I wanted to have him on the show to see how he could add value. So let's jump into things. Robert, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. No problem. So like I mentioned before we started recording, I like to have our guests just give a background of kind of where they started and what brought them up to today, kind of what's their journey. So let's get into that.
All right, cool. Well, I'm an architect and a builder in Florida, and I started my career in Auburn University. It took me 2 years and a semester just to get accepted into the architecture program. So I was in school for 7 years and a semester. But anyway, I was recruited by a firm in Boston, and that's where I began my architecture career. And then I moved to Florida, and I've been practicing myself since. And I've done various types of projects, you know, from hotel resorts, which is, there's a building behind me on the screen that is one of the buildings I designed and built. And this resort was 490 units. I was involved in the construction as a construction manager, and we fabricated our own structural panels and, you know, pre-stressed concrete panels and erected the buildings. And so that was a very, you know, a great job for experience in large, you know, complexes and buildings. And since then, I design and build custom homes for clients. And for a time there, when the economy was bad 15 years ago, I started doing structural and electrical inspections on multifamily buildings, which are mandatory here in Florida. And so I write the specifications for the structural repairs or the electrical repairs. And, you know, I do the inspections and I oversee the contractor that does the repairs, which is also a requirement by the state to make sure the contractors are doing the repairs, structural repairs properly. And so I have a vast amount of experience in multifamily, just not from a purchase perspective. So that's really what I'm trying to get into. And yeah, it's like another language, I think, for me, just learning all the terminology and the industry standards and how to navigate through it, so to speak.
Okay, got it. So you haven't purchased your first property yet, but you're there. Like, have you submitted some LOIs or anything like that yet?
Yeah, I've submitted some LOIs. I mean, my wife and I have purchased rentals before. I have a fourplex, multiple homes that we rent out Airbnb for years. And we actually even have a house in Europe that we're renovating. And So I have experience with rentals, just not on a large scale. So I think it'd be, you know, so we've rented to, you know, Section 8 and, you know, all the way up to Airbnbs or annual. So we have experience doing that. And that's valuable from a management perspective, you know, because you get your feet wet and you, you know, learn a lot of the things that, you know, tenants challenge you with, so to speak. But so, yeah, we're familiar with rentals, but I think on a large scale, you know, there are other factors that seem to be a little more challenging in different ways, especially from an analysis point of view.
That makes sense. But I guess when you actually acquire a multifamily property, you plan on using a third-party property manager. Is that right?
Yeah, most likely. Yeah, I'm looking at larger ones, so I can, you know, implement a property manager. The smaller ones, there really isn't enough profit to hire a property manager. And we've already been there and done that. And it would be nice to manage the management companies. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking, was your experience could really transfer to that. So you know what to look for and how to manage them, make sure they're doing the job the best of their ability. Yeah. Okay. So I forgot to mention earlier that we met through Mike Ely's Big Deal Mastermind thing, where he's focusing on apartments and hotels. And
correct.
I was wanting to understand, everyone's got their own kind of way of thinking about, like, is this mastermind going to really pay off for me? Is it the right step or decision? So what went into your way of thinking before you had joined, I guess about 6 months ago, you said?
I started looking at multifamily buildings and always wanting to invest. And, you know, I found it intimidating. And even with my experience, you know, being intimidated by that was something that I didn't anticipate. So, because I think the terminology is different, and how brokers present the information, it's almost like a puzzle. You have to kind of, you know, sift through it and investigate like what the real numbers are. And it was just very challenging for me and intimidating. So I thought, you know, if I can join a mastermind with a company that has experience and they're willing to train me and teach me, you know, how to get through that and how to start purchasing, you know, multifamily buildings, that would be invaluable. And it really has been invaluable. Just the knowledge I've learned and the coaching is very, very helpful. So yeah, I'm really glad I joined.
Okay. Have you been to, I know the next month there's a Bird 360 event coming up. Did you go to any of the prior ones?
I went to one in January. I think it was the OPM, Other People's Money Seminar. Yeah, I went to that one in January in Cincinnati.
Okay.
It was pretty interesting. Yeah, very valuable. There's so much information. To me, it's like you're learning another language, and it kind of seems insurmountable at first until you start, you know, learning a little bit. And the more you learn, the less questions you have, and you're able to focus on more of the, you know, the important information, so to speak. And you really get to, you know, dive into, the specifics of deals. And there are always, you know, different parameters on deals. And I'm actually, you know, I've toured some properties, and even with some brokers that, you know, are very well respected, but I'm kind of surprised at some of the things I find, you know, when I'm touring properties, just on how some of these owners do repairs and how they improve a property and how they're, you know, putting it back on the market to, you know, make a killing. And it seems a little odd to me that it's not done in a higher quality, if that makes any sense. That's just my experience initially, you know, touring properties and seeing, like, you know, how some of these, you know, owners, you know, improve the property. And sometimes they don't pull, you know, building permits, and I noticed, because of my background, things are not to code. And you know, so I'm just like scratching my head, like, well, I'm going to make an offer on this, but you know, I can't count that work because some of that has to be redone, you know, so it's just very, very interesting characteristics about this, you know, this market.
Okay. And are you primarily like in South Florida or just all over Florida? What part of Florida are you focusing on?
I'm based in South Florida. I know the building codes in all of Florida. I'm registered in other states as well. I'm registered in Ohio, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Indiana, just the various states. And yeah, so I design medical centers for a medical company in some of those states. I'm familiar with the building codes. And so I've been focusing on analyzing deals like in all the states, you know, so pretty much mostly southeast or the northeast states. I've been focusing on Texas east in general.
Okay. Texas and then east of Texas, you mean like southeast states?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Just thinking here, I think before we started recording, you mentioned that you had also built some homes. Can you just kind of talk about that process all the way from like the architecture planning of it through like finishing and selling the home?
Yeah. So most of the houses I build are for clients. So I've designed homes for them and I either design and build, or sometimes I design and they pick another contractor. And I've also built some houses that other architects have designed, you know, sometimes just word of mouth, you know, an owner will contact me and, you know, I'll do the construction. So, but basically, you know, in Florida, the codes are very strict because of the hurricanes. And building is a little bit challenging in the sense that whenever you build something, it has to conform to hurricane codes. Even any assembly you put in an opening, like a window or door, your roofing, like all of those items have to be, you know, tested before you even install them. And then you have to have them tested by inspectors for uplift. And the purpose is for windborne debris, because let's say you put, you know, roof tiles on a house and they're cement tiles and they're not, you know, adhered or make, you know, fastened properly, you know, a hurricane comes and those items can blow off the building and become missiles and crash into other structures and break windows and, you know, damage, you know, other structures. So, and even the windows and doors here are hurricane impact rated, which means they're tested by getting smashed with a 2x4 on edge, you know, 50 feet per second in three locations. Then they subject the assembly to wind and water infiltration, and it has to withstand the wind and the water and keep it out even after it gets impacted. So they're very strong items, and fastening these items and the windows and doors to the structure is very specific. And so you have to really conform to a lot of details when you're calling for inspections on things for them to pass. So it's an involved process, but before you even start construction, you have to design the plan, submit to the building department, it has to get approved, and you know, they scrutinize a lot of detail, especially because of the hurricanes here.
Okay. So how much would that cost if I was to pay you, for example, to create the plans, and like how long does that take?
Oh, I can spend a set of plans can take anywhere from 6 to 8 months to a year or more in design and construction drawings. And that's really for single family. When you get into multifamily here, most building departments require presentation to the Community Redevelopment Authority, and they want to approve the project before you even start drawing construction drawings. And in doing that, you have to go to a series of meetings and town meetings and present the project and respond to questions from neighbors. And, you know, it's a big process, and that could take a year, year and a half, sometimes 2 years, depending on the size of the project. And then when that's approved, then you start engineering and construction drawings. So when those are finished, submitted to the building department, then it gets reviewed by, you know, the, you know, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, zoning, or gets reviewed for construction. So if you were going to develop something down here, at least if you're going to develop, you know, 20 unit or more, you know, a complex or a building, you know, it's like you could take at least 2 to 2.5 years just for approvals, and then you start construction. So it's a 4-year project, basically 3 to 4 years from start to finish. So yeah, it's very involved. I imagine other states have some similar, like a similar approval process. And, but anyway, that's basically how it goes. So yeah, it's not like a quick, easy thing.
Okay. But if I was, I feel like it'd probably differ based on each local jurisdiction. So if I was navigating the Florida market, what jurisdictions would be particularly challenging and take longer than others?
Probably South Florida, because it's the high velocity hurricane zone here. And, you know, wind speeds here, you have to design for 170, 175. And the farther south you go, it gets to 180. The Keys, it's 185 mile an hour winds. So structurally, and your windows and doors and your roofing, all of those items have to conform to the forces imposed by those wind speeds. So, and they're very strict. So if, let's say, in contrast, you're designing or building something in Orlando or somewhere in the middle of the state, you know, the codes there are also strict and you have to conform, you know, to the standards in the Florida building code, but the wind speeds are much lower. So your assemblies that are installed, like your windows and doors and your structure, you know, it doesn't have to conform, you know, to such high forces, you know, wind forces. So it's more expensive, obviously, and because the process takes longer, materials are expensive, especially the impact windows and doors, and yeah, the whole process and the inspections take a little bit longer down here. And I imagine even in other states that aren't subject, you know, to hurricanes, they may not have those standards, and it's easier to get your plans approved and get the construction going, and probably you have less inspections there. So yeah, it's very strict here, but it's really for a good reason. So.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I actually had some guy, his name is Andy Williams, episode 50, he was on the show talking about how you can use credit cards to pull cash off of those to then fund these new builds, and specifically in Florida. And I remember watching some of his stuff on Instagram, and he had all these cinder block walls going up and everything, versus like in Texas where you see a lot of stick built homes. And I don't know how they do on like the coast, but that's probably exactly why, to your point, in terms of just the requirements there, using that specific material, like cinder block type stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's very common. I've had a client ask me once, she said, you know, if I wanted to build this house with, you know, wood framing, because it would be a lot cheaper, you know, would that conform to the hurricane code? And I said, you know, it might. You know, you can do the engineering and the design, and you can design and build a wood frame structure to conform to hurricanes, you know, the wind forces. But, you know, I wouldn't want to live in one of those. And the reason is, you know, wood doesn't last as long as concrete, for one. And in Florida, you have moisture and you have heavy rains and you have termites and you have a lot of things that can degrade, you know, the structure if it's wood. And I personally wouldn't want to build a house or any structure and occupy it, especially if there's a hurricane coming, because it's pretty serious. And I know some people may not really understand how powerful, you know, hurricane winds are. But our codes in Florida changed after 1992. Hurricane Andrew came and devastated some huge areas, residential neighborhoods, and a lot of that was wood frame construction. So I would recommend anything down here you definitely do not want, or anything coastal that could be subject to hurricanes, you just do not want to build a wood frame. Not recommended, you know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Interesting. I never really thought about like termites up against concrete, but that makes sense. Termites have a hard time chewing through that stuff. Do you know how much it's costing kind of per square foot to build in general in the Florida
market? I'm building a house, it's like $350 is like roughly it's around 350 a square foot and higher. So, and that's if you have this, you know, have a house or a building design and you have a contractor build it, you can probably build it a little cheaper if you cut corners, but in general, that's like where the construction costs are now here. They're roughly around 350 a square foot. And if you get real fancy and with finishes, it's higher. It's very expensive. It's gotten very expensive since the pandemic.
Got it. Yeah, I was going to say today's August 8th, 2023. So say like a year ago with inflation and everything like that, how is it compared? Maybe like a year or two ago or even 2019,
used to be like COVID. If you were building for 250 a square foot, that was like high end. 300, you're like really high end there. So, I mean, prices seem like in many ways in the last 2 years, like double what they used to be.
Oh, and that's just like, I guess for like a starter home now is 350 per square foot.
Yeah, if you go real basic, you know, and it's not real fancy or large, you can maybe get it down to 200, but that's like very basic. Very basic.
Maybe some affordable housing type developments or something.
Yeah, very basic. But yeah, costs are very high.
Okay, cool. I think that we've covered most everything. I just noticed there's one other thing that you do. There's like some, trying to think of how to describe this, like the disaster resistance construction, or we discovered that, but I think it was restoration stuff you're doing. Are you doing any of that, or is that someone else?
Like restoration?
Yeah.
Well, renovation, more like renovation, and I've done renovations and additions, and but the disaster resistant construction, you know, obviously hurricanes is one disaster. There's floods, and one of the biggest I think trends now that I've been noticing for the last 3 or 4 years are the increased amounts of fires that are just like wiping out neighborhoods. And most of the neighborhoods that they affect are wood frame construction. And so I've focused a lot of research on, you know, designing, you know, homes that are much more fire resistant than current construction methods. And I think it's a real need. And I'm very surprised by the lack of, I guess, you know, building codes that address it in some of these states like California, and, you know, fires are spreading everywhere. But I remember when I started researching this, there was one development in California, I think, or one fire that devastated, I think, in 1 year, like 29,000 homes. I just couldn't wrap my head around that. Like, I just couldn't, it was hard to kind of really, you know, just comprehend a fire wiping out 29,000 homes. And then I saw some interviews with homeowners that had their homes, you know, their homes rebuilt with wood frame, and they had their second home, you know, destroyed by a fire. And so I think there's a real need for, you know, disaster resistant construction, not just in Florida where the hurricanes are, but you have tornadoes and you have fires, and, you know, they seem to be increasing in strength and size, and, you know, it's a real problem. So I think it's very important, just for people's safety, you know, to have a house designed and built that, you know, they can, you know, it's their sanctuary that they can feel safe in, and they don't always have to evacuate. So anyway, that's what that's all about.
Okay, cool. Do you think there's any reason behind why these disasters are increasing in frequency?
Yeah, it could be global warming. It could be, you know, the Earth is just going through its cycle. You know, I know the global warming climate change thing is really highly debatable, and people get kind of heated about that on each side. So, you know, I don't have a thought or opinion on that either way, but it just seems like it's happening. I mean, there's evidence, or at least it's being reported more frequently, so people are more aware of it. And, but, you know, I think that, you know, the built environment's going to have to adapt to the, you know, the changes in the weather and all of the disasters we're facing. I mean, it really is important, you know, and it's expensive to build, you know, to withstand, you know, certain disasters. But, you know, even on an insurance level in Florida, it's like insurance here is like crazy, you know, the cost of it just because of the hurricanes. So, but if you have a home that's designed to, you know, the high velocity hurricane zone standards, no matter where it's located in the state, your insurance premiums are drastically reduced, like drastically. So, you know, at least that's an incentive for people, you know, to build, you know, to certain standards. But South Florida, you have no choice. You have to build to the high velocity hurricane zone standards. But some areas of Florida, like the Panhandle and Tampa and even on the West Coast, they may not be required to by code, but they really should anyway, because, you know, storms can hit anywhere. I mean, and it could be, you know, pretty large hurricane storms.
Okay. Can you quantify kind of the difference in the insurance premiums between something that has that stuff in place and versus one that doesn't have all of the resistances and stuff like that in place?
You could say 50, 60%. So let's say I have a house that is an older house and the roof trusses or rafters are not tied down on every truss, and you don't have impact windows and doors, and even the roof shape. If your roof shape is a hip roof, wind blows over the hip roof, you know, easier than other shape roofs. So they give you a discount for that. But you could save 50, 60% like easily if you have all the features, easily, maybe even more. It's a huge savings, and that's annually. So if your premium is normally, you know, some premiums, I have a premium on my house because it's older, it's, you know, $16,000 a year. And it would probably be eight or less if I had all the features, you know, all the new features. So, and that's annually. So you really do save a lot of money down here in Florida. You have, you know, hurricane design home and certain features, definitely. But it's a huge savings.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of factors I would never consider had I not known. So definitely appreciate you walking us through that. That's helpful. Sure. I think that we've hit on everything I wanted to hit on. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
No, I just think that, you know, this multifamily industry is very fascinating to me. And I think it's really a way to really grow your passive income, and it's a road to financial freedom. And yeah, I think anyone getting involved in passive investments, you know, if they do it with the right people, it's very positive. You know, it could change their life, you know. So, and I'm hoping it changes mine for the positive. I'm sure it will. And I'm looking forward to, you know, working in the mastermind a little more and starting to make some large deals.
Okay, perfect. If anyone wants to follow that journey or contact you, what's the best way they could do that?
Probably my website. It's rkarchitect24@gmail.com. No, I'm sorry, that's my email. It's robertkarchitect.com. That's my website, and there you can contact me there. That's the best way.
All right, perfect. Well, thanks a lot for your time. And
my pleasure.
Do it again soon. Sure. All right, talk to you later.
Thank you, Mason. Have a good one.
Hey, guys, I appreciate you taking the time to listen or watch this episode. As you might have noticed, we don't run ads, but what I would like you to do is just subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would help us out tremendously. You don't even have to leave a review, but if you do feel like you had gained a lot of value from this episode, feel free to share it with your friends and comment, like, subscribe, all that. But subscribing to YouTube would be what helps us the most. That's the only thing I ask. Thanks a lot. And if you do want to get in touch with me, feel free to email me at mason@scalablerei.com. Thanks a lot.